Hello and welcome to Fresh Voices, the opinion sections podcast for the Georgetown Voice. My name is Sienna Brancato and I'm the Voices Editor.
My name is Julia Pinney and I'm an Assistant Voices Editor.
And my name is Liz Pankova and I am also a Voices Assistant Editor.
With this podcast, our goal is to have conversations with writers and talk in more detail about specific Voices pieces while elaborating on larger themes that we've discussed in each piece. So for this first podcast, our first episode, we're going to be talking about Liz's piece entitled No, I Don't Know Putin, Stop Rushing to Conclusions. So be sure to check that piece out online and in print in our next issue. So we can just jump right in and get started. Of course, like, the title is really punny and quippy, and so the piece, you can speak more about this, but the piece talks about just having a Russian-American identity and what that means in today's times and growing up with that. So if you want to elaborate more on that.
Both of my parents are from Russia, and they emigrated when they were, like, in their 20s. They had me here, so I was born in the U.S., but because my parents were kind of really not assimilated at the time that they moved here, I grew up in a pretty Russian environment, so I wasn't really exposed to American pop culture, American, like, children's books until later in my life, and that definitely shaped my identity and who I am today.
Awesome. And so, yeah, I guess we can just talk more about your Russian identity. Like, what are some of your favorite Russian traditions and cultural practices and foods? You mentioned a certain part in the piece, like, wishing that you had Lunchables and Scooby-Doo gummies instead of the lunches that you were bringing to school. So if you want to just talk more about that.
Yeah, so I think this is something that other children of immigrants or, like, first-generation immigrants themselves can relate to. But when you're a child, especially when you're, like, different than other people, you tend to try to hide those differences or kind of minimize them. And that's definitely something that I felt as a child. So my parents did not know what Lunchables were, and I don't think we ever went into, like, the junk food aisle at the grocery store. And so I had a lot of, like, ethnic foods, like borscht, which is, like, beet soup. It's a traditional Russian dish. And plov, which is also, it's like a rice dish, also popular in Russia. And I had those a lot. And, of course, you know, like, as a kid, you want the things that all the other kids have. But it's not like I was super embarrassed of what I had for lunch. It's just, like, you know, those Scooby-Doo gummies are really good. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so do you want to talk more about, like, your favorite traditions?
So one of the traditions that I actually also mention in the piece is New Year's and New Year's celebrations in Russia. So unlike in the U.S., New Year's is, like, the biggest winter holiday in Russia, and it kind of takes the place of Christmas. It's pretty similar to what Christmas is here. So it's a really family-centered holiday, and it's also similar to Christmas in that it's when all the kids get presents, and then this Santa-like figure called Ded Moroz comes, which translates into, like, Father Christmas, kind of. And so growing up, like, New Year's was the day I was, like, most excited for in my life, and it was always, like, really a lot of celebrations. A lot of the times me and my family would get together with, like, our family friends, go to, like, a house in, like, next to a ski chalet or something like that. And it would be really, like, a special holiday. And, of course, like, that definitely started clashing with my American identity as I got older, because New Year's in America is, like, a really party-centered holiday. So that's definitely been a struggle. Yeah, picking out New Year's plans is never easy for me.
So Liz, in your piece you talk about a turning point in fifth grade when you first became aware of other people's perceptions of Russia. Would you tell us about that moment?
So when I was in fifth grade, I wasn't really sharing, like, my Russianness with people, except for with, like, my close friends who came to my house and, like, had to eat borscht because my mom made it for them. I wasn't really super aware of anything. One time I was in math class, and you know, I don't know, in a lull during the class, I guess, this guy who I didn't really talk to, his name's Jake, haven't talked to him since fifth grade, but he turned around and he was like, oh, like, do you know who Putin is? Like, do you know Putin? And I was like, no. I mean, obviously I knew who he was, but no, I didn't know him, I said. And he was like, oh, well, he started the Cold War. And I was so taken aback. I was like, what? Like, excuse me? I didn't even know what the Cold War really was. I had like a vague understanding of it. And yeah, I think that's like the first comment that I have like in my memory, like cemented in my memory. I actually tried to start my like college application essays with that anecdote, but that didn't work out. So I got to do it in this piece. But yeah, so that's kind of where it all started.
And you wrote about how as you became older, you became more attached to your heritage, and these stereotype comments started really annoying you. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about that time?
Yeah, so I think as I got older, like, I realized a lot, like, more how hard it was going to be, especially in the future, for me to, like, preserve this part of my identity if I continue, which I probably will, living, you know, in the U.S. or just outside of Russia. And because it was such a big part of my life growing up, I don't know, just, like, I think in the beginning of high school, I had this moment where I was like, wow, like, I really want, like, my future children to speak Russian, but, like, how am I going to do that if I live in America and I'm surrounded by, like, everything American? And I think that was the moment that I was like, you know, I want to, like, do everything in my power to, like, keep this part of my identity. And hand in hand with that, in high school especially, I started realizing, and in middle school, just, like, the attitudes towards Russia, not even from my friends, but, like, in class, for example, like, when we learned about World War II. In Russia, World War II is, like, a really big kind of part of the national identity, and, like, you know, May 9th is Victory Day, and it's celebrated, and everyone gets off work, and it's, like, it's a really huge kind of part of what it means to be Russian, just because, you know, because of the involvement of Russia in the war and because of how many people died, how many people suffered. And that's, you know, not something that's recognized in the U.S. And, you know, the U.S. isn't Russia, so I wouldn't expect it to be. But, you know, every time we would learn about World War II in my, like, American classes, it would be like, oh, like, the U.S. came in on D-Day and, like, saved the day. And we wouldn't really focus on, like, the Soviet Union's, I guess, involvement in the war. And that was just weird to me, because especially at that time, I was also in, like, evening school at the Russian embassy, where we, like, had this huge focus on, like, literature from World War II and, like, World War II history. Yeah, and so that contrast really started coming out as I got older.
You talk a lot in your piece, too, about America in general and the concept of being such a heterogeneous society, and the concept of diversity. And so in your piece, you say diversity has become a magic word devoid of concrete definition, but nevertheless desired. So can you elaborate a lot more on just the concept of diversity here and in relation to your piece?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think, like, that's something that, you know, as a country, like, the United States really prides itself on, and, like, understandably so, because, you know, that is a really unique quality that the United States has, is that, like, there's just this heterogeneous population, and not only heterogeneous, but, like, they're, like, Russian Americans, they're Chinese Americans, and they're all kind of also Americans too. And so that kind of, you know, creates obviously this melting pot, which is a phrase, like, often used. And I think, you know, as we all know, America has had its struggles with actually, you know, staying true to this value of the melting pot, you know, anywhere from, like, racism to, like, Japanese internment camps. And I think right now, when I say diversity is, like, a magic word, I think I'm just describing, like, the trend and, like, the push to accept other cultures and to like understand other cultures, especially in like a respectful way. So for example, like with Halloween costumes, right? Like it's been a recent trend that we want to not like appropriate other cultures. And I think that's like really great. And I think that's really important. And I don't really, like, I don't think that that's something that happens with, that has happened with, like, our attitudes towards Russia, just because, I guess, this trend has also coincided with, like, political relations between the U.S. and Russia becoming a lot worse. So, yeah, I think with the word diversity, like, obviously that's something that applies to the United States in general, because it is such a unique country in its... in how heterogeneous it is, and how like there's so many different people from different cultures here, and they're all kind of also Americans, so they all have the ability to share these cultures with each other. But of course, as we all know, the United States hasn't really stayed true to this message, to this narrative, throughout the course of its history, and a lot of the times, you know, the people that we kind of say we're accepting are actually oppressed or aren't represented in the government, in the media, whatever. And I think today, one of the best things about like being in our generation, living in our generation, is that there is definitely a push to improve the situation and to kind of really like embody this idea of a melting pot and embody and amplify like these voices that weren't heard previously. And that's really great, I think. But then that also kind of poses a dilemma in how exactly we do that and what exactly is that going to look like? How do we kind of, you know, make sense of America's complicated history and all the people that have been involved in it? So diversity has definitely been something that, like, you know, all companies are looking for. It's embedded in a lot of companies and organizations' mission statements, but we don't exactly know what that is and kind of how to achieve it. But nevertheless, I think it's an important effort. But at the same time, I think it's an effort that doesn't necessarily like apply to certain populations. So, for example, one of them being Russian Americans, or just Russia in general, like our attitudes towards that country haven't really been changing as much as I guess I would have expected with this trend of like acceptance and like accepting diversity. And that's not to say that we're like done, you know, improving acceptance of other cultures. Of course, like racism is definitely still a thing, despite the fact that they're, you know, African-American leads in movies or something. But there's definitely an attitude that I think could change towards Russia and Russian culture and Russian people.
Yeah, and so you talk a lot in your piece, too, about the presence of these inflammatory headlines, like the one from USA Today, which is Trump's bromance with Putin is history, and you say that it sounds like it could be a headline from The Onion, you know, and just outright prejudice is being expressed specifically towards Russia and Russian people. And I guess I wanted to talk more about, like, if you've noticed a change or just in general what the sort of climate is, especially with the rising tensions between the two countries in relation to the sort of fraught political relationship and the possibility of interference in the elections and all of that, and that sort of, you know, specter of negativity over things, and how you've noticed the conditions are in relation to that.
So I think, you know, on one hand, I mentioned that, like, as I've gotten older, I've become more aware, and I think that's just natural. Like, as you get older, you start reading the news more, and so you become more aware of, like, people's attitudes towards things. But yeah, definitely, like, not only was it my age, like, the gap in my age from being young to being older, but just the change in the relationship. And that has definitely been something that I've noticed. And for me, like, it's just kind of annoying. And sometimes it's not even about, like, the prejudice. It's just about, like, I feel like there's some sort of like deception going on. For example, like a couple months ago, the cover of Time magazine was like the White House being kind of overpowered, like turning into like the St. Basil's Cathedral in Russia. And I'm sure you guys all know what that is. It's like the one with the onion domes, the really colorful one. And of course, like that's an image of Russia that everyone can recognize, you know? So I understand why Time would put that on the cover, but honestly, it's really misleading because the idea is supposed to be like the government is taking over, right? And that's not even inside the Kremlin. Like that's not the Russian government building. It's a church. It's like a religious building. So like that's just kind of symbolizes how I feel. I feel like there's some sort of misleading going on a lot of the time. And of course, that's really frustrating. And it's frustrating to see it not only from like people on Twitter or like my friends, you know, like stereotypical comments from people I know from high school. Like, yeah, that's, I expect that. But seeing it in like USA Today or like the Washington Post, which are sources that I trust and that I usually like reading, that's kind of what's mostly frustrating to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you also bring up a quote by James Clapper where he said, you know, talking about Russian people, that they're genetically driven to be spies who, quote, co-opt, penetrate, and gain favor. And so I guess I also, it's related to talk a bit more about like the prejudices in at an institutional political level, especially like James Clapper, you know, director of national intelligence, former director of national intelligence, versus these sort of misconceptions or stereotypes at an interpersonal or cultural level. So I guess if you could speak more to the distinction or the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, as I said, it makes a huge difference when like a person who's in a position of authority, like, you know, James Clapper, is saying these things, because that he's an automatically credible source just from like his position of authority. People see him as a credible source, and him saying something so like blatantly prejudiced as like Russian people are genetically driven to be some way, like that is explicitly wrong to say something like that. And it was honestly, I didn't even know about him saying that. I didn't even know about that quote until I started writing this piece and I started, you know, doing more like research, digging more into like things about Russia in the media. And that's kind of when I saw these articles and I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, I can't believe no one cared that this was said. So that's definitely, I think, an important.
Liz, do you think that the attitudes towards Russian Americans is different than America's impression of Russia?
Yeah, so I think there is definitely a difference. So Russian Americans are different than Russian people, you know, obviously, because they are also Americans. But the way they were described and the way, like, the attitude was towards them, like, especially in the press during the 2016 election, was mostly that, like, oh, all of these Russian Americans are Trump supporters. You know, the image of a Russian American that is most common is, like, Russian immigrants that, like, live in communities on, like, Brighton Beach in New York. And, you know, I have family there. So, yeah, that's a pretty... that is a population of Russian Americans that exists, but at the same time, that's far from, you know, the only population of Russian Americans. And even in like statistical reports, only like half of Russian Americans voted for Trump. So, you know, it's not like it's this one homogenous population that like knows that socialism is bad and like wants a small government and therefore likes Trump. So that's something, yeah, that I think also is important to note. But also, I think with Russian Americans, I mean, it's a term, like any something American description, it's kind of, there are different levels. It's obviously a spectrum. You know, a Russian American can be someone who moved here 5 years ago or who, you know, has lived here their entire life. But I know, for example, with my parents, even though, you know, they grew up in Russia, they moved here when they were like 20 years old. They've been living here their whole adult life, pretty much. So I would consider them Russian Americans. And they've definitely experienced like comments, even from professional coworkers, that I think are kind of surprising. One thing that actually happened to my dad like a year ago, especially, you know, it was right in the midst of all this turmoil with the elections and like the hacking and whatever. And we have these neighbors who we've lived next to pretty much the whole time we've been living in our house, which is like 15 years. And we've always been friendly with them, you know, whatever. And one time my dad was like walking by and they said hi to him. And then they started asking him all these questions and they were like, "So, like, why did you move here? What are you doing here? Like, what's your job?" And my dad was like, that's kind of weird. And, you know, on one hand, it's like, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Were they really trying to, like, figure out if we're spies? I don't know. But on the other hand, it's kind of strange, especially given what was going on, and especially given that we've been living there, like, 20 years. So that's just a little thing that happened. And of course, that's not the only thing. You know, I could tell some really long stories, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, and so I think just to wrap things up, I don't want to make it seem like, Liz, like, give us the answer, save the world, you know, all this stuff. But I just wanted to ask if there was any, you know, overarching message that you wanted to leave us with, or, you know, an outcome that you think would be ideal or anything like that.
So I think for me, the ideal outcome would be more, you know, understanding, more desire to kind of reach some kind of understanding, especially I think on like a cultural and a social level. So in terms of the political situation, Russia and the US, you know, they've been adversaries for a pretty long period of time in history, and you know, that's not something that the general public really has control over. But on the other hand, you know, we do have control over how we treat people, how we think about other countries. And I think like trying to explore a little further than the most recent like headline about how horrible Russia is something that we should all strive for. And yeah, you know, taking everything that's in the media about it with a grain of salt, because you have to keep in mind that these news outlets are trying to make money, and like Russia is basically equivalent to clickbait. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you for tuning in to our first ever episode of Fresh Voices.
Thank you.
And we hope you'll join us again next time. I'm going to send it back to Liz for a Russian goodbye.
До свидания.